Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple, and you're listening to Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My guests today are Everett Presley, Director of Specialty Foods at the Wine Library in Springfield, New Jersey, and Paul Price, currently the Green Market NYC Manager for Consider Bardwell Farm, Vermont Cheesemaker. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thank you for coming.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You're very welcome. So I have crossed paths with both of these guys in the cheese world more than once through various jobs, and I thought they would be very good examples to talk about cheese paths, pathways through your cheese career, how you got started, what were you thinking, where are you going to go, that kind of thing. So... first of all, let me ask you, Paul, what did you study in school?
Are we talking about college?
College. Where'd you go to college and what did you study?
Sure. I went to Washington University in St. Louis, and I got a BFA in photography.
An artist.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. I feel like every single person I meet in this business has like a former life as an artist.
Right.
It's so strange. Yeah, so I studied photography, but I've also been to many other schools since then. Too many. I did get a degree from the Culinary Institute of America. And that was sort of my first step into this world.
So. Okay. Well, I have a question first. Was your family very focused on enjoying food and cooking?
Yes, actually. We had a local cheese and coffee shop, and we went there every Saturday, and then we'd get fresh bread, and there was a farmer's market right there.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then
Was that in St. Louis?
That was in St. Louis. Yeah,
okay.
I actually grew up a block from the campus that I went to, but so we would have Saturday lunch outdoors with a baguette and cheese, and so cheese has always been a part of my family.
And your parents kind of taught you to eat it and like it.
Yes.
Oh, cool. How about you, Everett? What did you study in school? Where did you first go to school?
Well, I jumped around for a few different schools, but ultimately ended up graduating with a BS in Culinary Arts at Mississippi University for Women.
For women, yeah.
A school that's been taking men for quite a while, but never decided to change the name, and I think to this day is still Mississippi University for Women.
Okay.
But, yeah... I went there for culinary arts, but it was a Bachelor of Science program, so it was a little bit longer. And then ultimately ended up going to NYU for a little bit of grad school in food studies in that program. And that's ultimately where I ended up meeting Rob Kaufelt and kind of fell into cheese.
Now, did your parents, I know you lived in a lot of different places. Did your parents love food, love cooking, or was it something you...
They absolutely love food. I mean, we're... Technically, I was born in Mississippi, but I was raised kind of, for the most part, in Brazil. My parents were missionaries, and so when I was 10, we moved down to Brazil. But all throughout, we've always, you know, been a very food-driven family, exploring new things, tasting new things. And so, you know, going to Brazil was no different. You know, going to, you know, every corner, there's a bread store making fresh bread every day, and the cheese element in Brazil wasn't too heavy.
Right, I would think so.
You know, there was some carryover from, you know, obviously all the colonial stuff, but it was kind of a smaller cheese scene. It was a big time beef industry, and that's where most of the the cattle ended up.
Okay. What Everett, what was your very first food job?
Very first food job, waiting tables. Freshman year of college at a now burned down restaurant in Jackson, Mississippi. And
But you were studying food, so you already
knew.
No.
At that point in time, I was, I think, officially pre-dental. Our head switched over to art education. I was somewhere in that midst.
So not yet on food
Not yet on food at all. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny, too, because I departed ways there and kind of non-favorable. I was actually let go and was told that I would never make it in the food industry. Was kind of one of the verbatim things that the guy said as he was firing me. So
I was fired as a waitress. I was
still
fired as a waitress. I only lasted a week, though.
No, I was there for quite a while, but it was how the restaurant industry goes sometimes.
Okay, what about you? What was your first food job, Paul?
Does dishwasher count?
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
When I was 16, I decided I needed to get a job, and for some reason I got into my head that I had to be a dishwasher first. It was like
you wanted to be
the job that I needed to be. It felt like the quintessential 16-year-old job at the time, which was so weird.
Mm-hmm. Did you need working papers for that job?
No. It was a dishwasher at this horrible place in downtown St. Louis called Café de France.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a very French chef. And I remember the chef taunting me all the time. And they had these super gross practices like reusing leftover wine from glasses and cooking. And taking eaten bread and grinding it up into
bread crumbs. I'm hoping this restaurant's not open anymore.
Are they listening?
Café de France, downtown St. Louis. And the chef was horrible to me. And I remember one day.
Why?
That's what he does. You know?
Okay.
And I remember one day he made a very special dessert. It was a chocolate meringue cookie. And he made his own vanilla ice cream, and he was having the entire staff try it. Like, everybody tasted it. And they were all, like, walking around eating their ice cream and meringue, and he saw me in the corner, and he goes, "Oh, you poor baby, you're sucking." And then he brings it over to me, and he gives me one. Which, oh, thanks. And I taste it, and I go, tastes like a frozen Oreo.
Did you know?
And a week later, I had another job.
Did you know that was an insult?
Yeah. No, I knew what I was doing.
So, can you tell me the story of how you fell in love with cheese?
Well, sure. Yeah. I remember growing up, my dad would buy a half-wheel Stilton for Christmas every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we would definitely like spread that on celery. It was very traditional. And then every Saturday I was like brie and bread and prosciutto. And so I just grew up that way. I mean, both my parents studied in Europe and come from that sort of food background. So mm-hmm. It was very natural to just be into cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't have to rebel and go the other way.
But I think the first time I really was like into the product was... I got my first job after culinary school here in New York and was at Whole Foods, and I just sort of lucked out.
You were in the Bowery store when the fromagerie opened.
Yes, I was actually one of the people hired to help run the fromagerie. There were six of us at the time, and they gave us a ton of training. I don't even know how I got selected for this group. And we met all these crazy people, and...
People from Neil Jardieri,
Irving Mons,
right.
Gufonti, like all the big cheese houses. I mean, and like,
excellent training.
Yeah, like Daphne Zeppos gave me my first cheese class. Like, it was just an amazement of like the people that surrounded me there, and they brought in this gentleman from Neil's Yard who used to work there, Evan. And he basically worked with me one-on-one and the other staff, too, for about 8 weeks, I guess.
Wow.
And he really imparted a love of cheese. It was like every time you meet with a customer, it's a communion. Slicing the cheese off with a knife and handing it immediately to the customer. And just eating with the customer all the time, it was like... And you begin to taste things and different flavors, and you don't think of people as customers anymore. You just think about more like the cheese and eating it with people,
mm-hmm.
and then talking about it. And That was wonderful.
That must have been irresistible. I mean, that was a great opportunity.
Yeah, no, it was like you taste Wensleydale, and it can be like a very boring cheese, but then you can sit there with Evan and taste Wensleydale, and suddenly all these flavors sort of come out, and you realize how satisfying a cheese that is.
Mm. How about you, Everett? How did you fall in love with cheese?
Well, mine was probably a little bit more along the lines of a lot of probably most of America, where it was all pasteurized, you know, processed, all the grocery store stuff. But honestly, when I was a little kid, like before we even moved to Brazil, I remember like during the holidays, it was one of my favorite things to get those really, I mean, I look on them now and know they're absolutely horrible, but there's this nostalgia for those cheese and sausage sets that you would have in them, like the mall kiosks around the holiday season. Yeah. And it would be just, you know, like a summer sausage and a couple of mustards. And as a kid, I would devour those. I'd absolutely devour them.
Particularly the cheese or just the whole package?
Particularly the cheese, but the whole package in general. I mean, like having, like, you know, having a whole selection of things to play with and see, you know, stacking them up, you know, and seeing which one tastes right, which one tastes better together. Yeah. And even though you're only dealing with really kind of lowest common denominator product, it's still fun to play around with and experiment. And it's kind of
like Lunchables.
It's like Lunchables, but with a larger palette to play with.
Right, right, right.
And that was, you know, I guess that's probably why Lunchables are so successful. But right. That's where it came from. But then ultimately, like I said, my family was a really big food family. So, you know, wherever we were, we always were eating good. And then when I came back from Brazil and was in the U.S., it was just one of those things as exploring as much as possible. And then and after I ended up in culinary school and then going to NYU, really getting, I mean, like, for example, September 12th, 2001 was when I had my first everything bagel. You know, it's one of those things of like...
The day after 9/11.
Yes. Exactly. Because, I mean, it was...
And you remember that.
I distinctly remember that. Mm. I mean, it was one of those things like after it happened, we ended up going out to Long Island to a friend of mine's house, and it was her Italian mother completely loading us up with... I mean, there was like six of us, and we had six pizzas and like 12 calzone, you know, 12 sandwiches. And then she also had gone out and gotten McDonald's, and then she pulled out all the leftovers. And it was just like, you know... Not that there was a cheese course, but there was a lot of cheese involved in this meal. But, you know, there's something about just exploring the different foods and being in different places and doing it. And then when I met Rob Kaufelt, I just kind of like...
Ultimately, he was doing one of those...
I kind of fell into cheese as far as being their profession.
He was doing one of his things at your school?
Yeah, and I had like volunteered to assist, so I didn't have to pay to take the class.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, at the end of the thing, he was like, you know, if you ever want a job, you know, give me a call. And it was like a year or so later, I was like, hey, remember me? and I literally have been doing cheese ever since in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to leave once you're into it.
There's a lot of really cool people, and there's I mean, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of those things you can go home stinking, but it's a different kind of stink than what most people go home stinking like. You know, and it's, you know, there's something about it. It definitely soaks into you.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've both worked at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You had a short stint there.
About almost a year combined total.
Uh-huh. And you've worked at a variety of stores. Well, you've worked for Bittersweet Plantation, so he did a stint at a cheesemaker.
Working for sales for a cheesemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And worked for the Fresh Market, worked for Whole Foods, was at Murray's for like 3.5 years, and then have been at the Wine Library in New Jersey for almost 6 years now.
Wow.
Wow, that's a long time.
Wow. Yeah. So your history is, you started at Whole Foods,
cheese-wise. I started at Whole Foods, yeah. And after about a year, all of the staff that they had set aside for the fromagerie was gone.
The store did not meet its promise.
To say it gently.
Yeah.
But it was a fabulous cheesecake there.
Some really high expectations, I believe, for that store.
Yes, yes, yes. European expectations.
Yes. But that was just, I mean, I was in contact with producers constantly, and I was getting feedback from, there were all these people that were invested in that project, and they kept coming back and checking in on it, and I was always there when they came back. And then I began buying, And then since then, I've worked at Lucy's Way, and mm-hmm. I've worked for Considered Bardwell Farm. Mm-hmm. Which is,
so you've kind of gone American. First,
I've gone
Lucy's
American,
Way
yeah.
has mm-hmm. is almost is I've, all American, and now you're selling American.
Yeah, I feel like I'm one of the least traveled mongers I know. That's for
oh,
sure.
No.
Yeah. Like, if you don't count the 4-hour trip to Vermont and back that I make every other week.
So. Okay. 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 Well, I think it's time for a break. We'll be back with Cutting the Curd with my guests, Paul Price and Everett Presley, after the break.
You're listening to Home of Emptiness by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
We'd like to send a special thank you to our latest business member, Consider Bardwell. 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. A century later, Angela Miller, Russell Glover, and Chris Gray are revitalizing the tradition. Their cheeses are made by hand in small batches from whole, fresh milk that is antibiotic and hormone-free. Only microbial rennet is used in their cheesemaking. All cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves. For more information or to purchase cheese, visit considerbardwellfarm.com. To learn more about becoming a business member, email us info@heritageradionetwork.org. Every Tuesday at 12 p.m., you can call food scientist Dave Arnold and ask any question you want.
John from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave.
Cooking issues!
Who am I fooling? This is horrible stuff. Without glutamic acid, you die.
It is a matter of taste, but there's a lot more fat in sausage than you think.
Get ahead of the curve. Tune into Cooking Issues every Tuesday at 12 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Diane Stemple, Cutting the Curd. We're back again with Paul Price and Everett Presley, who both of them have worked for really years now as cheesemongers. So we're going to discuss some cheesemonger questions.
Bring it on.
I think, Paul, you asked, you had brought up what's the most frequently asked question to a cheesemonger?
Oh, man. Now my brain is totally going blank.
Well, now, I want you, though, to also not answer just as Consider Bardwell Farm.
Sure.
Because then you're only dealing with a few cheeses.
It's true.
Right. I want you to sort of step back into your Lucy's Way or Whole Food behind the counter.
Sure.
Okay. You know, to sort of a more, you know, a more...
Well, I think, I don't know. I remember getting, does this have salt in it? A lot.
Yeah.
You know, and or...
I always thought the salt question had to do with price, bizarrely enough.
Really?
I thought when you handed somebody cheese from Murray's, when they said, this is too salty, they actually meant, this is too expensive.
They're just using it as a...
Right. I'm just... Right. I don't want this cheese, and it's too salty, but it's really too expensive.
Now, people definitely do that. I mean, it, with salty or anything, I mean, they'll come up with any excuse if you know, you can kind of almost see sometimes that, like, oh, they're liking it, and then they see the price tag. It's one of those, like, if you feed somebody, I remember being in a place where a guy had cooked up a whole plate, one half had filet mignon, and the other half had pig testicles, and they were both prepared exactly the same way, and once they were on the platter, it looked almost identical.
Okay.
And people were eating them, and it was like, oh, these are great, this is great, this is great. And then it was that, like, the second they were told what it was, this, like, it went from being delicious to... Well, no, it absolutely was a trick.
Oh.
I mean, you know, but at the same time, like, that mental, you know, what your brain does...
Right, you have to detach yourself.
Yeah, what your brain does, what your thoughts can do to what you're eating, or like well beyond what you can actually control.
Right, right, right.
And I mean, so, but I mean, that's kind of getting away from the point of being salty, being a
right,
like
a, right,
an excuse
right,
not to get it because of the price.
I think it's just usually for me, people are afraid of salt.
Afraid of salt.
They just are.
And why are they afraid of salt?
Well, it's like this whole nutrient-crazed
culture
where people are concerned about the percentage of fat and mm-hmm. percentage of this mm-hmm. and that, to have this in it, and they're not thinking about their food as a whole item.
Right.
So they're looking for, where are your low-fat cheeses?
Yeah.
And they probably shouldn't be coming to any of us with that question.
Well, at the market, at Greenberg, I mean, I don't make low-fat cheese.
Right, yeah. Right. So what do you think is the most frequently asked cheesemonger question, Everett?
I mean, it definitely over the years, it's changed. I mean, it kind of the trends of what's going on definitely kind of play a role in what people are actually coming in and asking about. I mean, you know, whatever new fad diet is going to influence what people are asking, and you know, if it's got listed on, you know, Oprah said something about it, or Martha said something about it, or you know, and a lot. I find that is kind of one of the things that's kind of drives a lot of the questions more than anything specifically about like nutrition or like, you know, more recently it's been locality and how where is this made,
right,
and that sort of thing. And then once again, it's just kind of like, it's just following the trends of what you're seeing on food blogs and in restaurants and what people are thinking about and then, you know, are being told to think about and obliging and going along.
Have you increased your local cheeses at Wine Library?
I carry local cheeses that will sell.
Okay.
Because this is a business, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know... So not everything that's just
but
because...
But over the 6 years, has it increased?
As default, yeah, that's, you know, the cheeses have gotten better.
Right.
Yeah, no, I would definitely say that.
Certainly.
Yeah, you know, so there's more of them, and there's more that are better.
Right, that's true.
It does make it easier.
Okay, what would you say is the stupidest question you've ever been asked? Can you remember the stupidest question?
Does this have milk in it?
And how did you keep a straight face? Did you just say yes?
Yes. You just actually, one of the cheesemongers that works with me at market, her tactic is to just turn around.
When she doesn't like the question?
Yeah, when
do you say jump in then? Do you jump in if
Well, I wait for a second because I kind of want the person to get the full effect of the turning around.
Oh.
But yeah, no, in the end, yeah, I'll step in.
I remember at Murray's, we used to, if we were bored, we would sometimes compete for who's going to have the worst customer of the day. And
it sometimes wasn't hard.
And you would want like someone to come over and witness your bad customer so you could get the credit for having dealt with the bad customer.
I had an experience like that at a restaurant recently. I ordered the cheese appetizer knowing knew
it was going to be trouble.
It was like gonna be horrible. This like
Wait, was there seared tuna on the menu as well?
It was like some sort of a white bean dish with a burrata in it.
Uh-oh.
And it was $8 and I said it was a nice restaurant. This is a place where the entrees are in the 20s. So I was like, what is this going to be?
So you ordered it.
I ordered it.
And it came
more out of curiosity than actually thinking it was gonna be any good. Or
yeah.
It so you were going to be their worst customer.
I guess so.
Did you complain?
No. Oh. When you order a dish like that, you roll with the punches.
Well, was it absolutely horrible, though? Or was it, did they actually pull something out that was...
Well, I'll just say that the people I was eating dinner with were satisfactory. So who cares about the food?
Okay. What is the easiest cheese to sell? Everett, what would you say is the easiest cheese to sell right now?
I'd say probably anything that has truffles in it. Like in my area right now,
truffles are big.
Huh. People are,
and those are not cheap.
They're not cheap. I mean, they're, you know, it's one of those things that to me, it's it's truffle flavor with some texture. So right. I'm not too keen on most of what's available out there. There's only a few that I think are, you know, worth eating mm-hmm. on a regular. And I mean, truffle, it's one of those things. It's such an overwhelming flavor that, you know, most people just go, boom, here's some truffle, and it's...
I want it.
Yeah, and okay. well, and they want it to dominate, and oh, it, okay. ultimately where everything else kind of stands to the wayside, where everything else is unimportant. It's just about the truffle flavor. Mm-hmm.
Do you have truffle tremor?
No.
Ah. Do you know what it is? It's humblefog yes. with a tiny bit of truffle.
Yes.
It's probably seasonal.
I'm not sure about
that.
I don't think it's seasonal.
Okay.
But it only makes a very rare appearance okay. behind my counter.
And what do you think is the easiest cheese to sell?
The easiest cheese to sell is Manchester. No, the easiest
currently,
cheese to
currently. And how easiest, come? How
well,
come?
The easiest cheese to sell is always the one that's tasting the best.
Okay.
And all you have to do
you
is...
You have confidence in your customers.
Right. Well, all you have to do is get across the threshold and get the flavor on their tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it's a great... cheese, it's going to happen.
Now you can see your Niels Yard Dairy training there because
yes.
they want the cheese in your mouth so that you taste it and love it and buy it.
Right.
That's it's exactly what we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you right. have so many samples at Wine Library. At Wine Library, they'll have how many samples at a time?
Well,
10?
A
15?
Lot of times have anywhere from a dozen to two dozen passive yeah. samples going at any point in time. Which
it's a very generous
we have
shop.
Kind of curtailed in the past week or so with in reference to the potential flu season going around.
Oh, wow.
And trying not to spread that around
that's
any,
a good
anymore.
Idea.
And customers have actually had a good response to that. Usually it's if we have like one cheese is missing its sample out, we get people going,
Where is
the sample for this one? This sample's empty. And you
and
know,
you've told them we're cutting back because of flu season?
We put
season?
A bunch of signs out, so it's you know, it's clear that, like, you know, flu season, we're trying not to get you sick right,
right
now.
Right, and we'll be back.
And not that we're trying to get you sick, but all the other fools that are sticking their hands in here are
right,
trying to get
right,
you sick.
Right. And you'll be back in March.
As soon as it stops popping up every day on the news, we'll start bringing sampling back. Because I mean, it does. It drives sales. It's one of those things. I deal with generally a kind of non cheese backgrounded staff. So ultimately, I rely on the cheese to sell itself, and putting it out there and letting people taste it is the best way to do it. You know. Somebody can tell you where it's from, who made it, and tell you a story about the time they visited the farm, or the person can take 2 seconds and put it in their mouth and taste it. And, you know, both of them ultimately can sell the product, but, you know...
It's faster
you,
to
you have
put
to work
the cheese
with
in
what
mouth.
You got and get the product out there. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it also works that we never have any old cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, what... if someone says, okay, it's, you know, Super Bowl soon, what kind of cheese... would you sell for beer or for Super Bowl? Manchester. Now, you're supposed to be pretend you're a cheesemonger.
Oh, man.
Okay.
No.
Dorset.
There's, well, there's a beer for every cheese.
Okay.
No, I think if I'm at the market, I'd probably push Paulet.
Okay.
Just because people love to melt cheese. For the Super Bowl.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's our big melter.
Okay.
And if I was not... it always struck me weird that people, when I did work at Lucy's Way or Whole Foods, people, when they were having parties like that, they would buy the ritziest, knobbiest cheeses. And I just don't feel like that's a holiday for that.
Right.
It's a holiday.
Right. It's a holiday.
That's when
for
you pull the cheddar out.
Yeah. Cheddar.
That's when you pull the jack out. That's
right.
when you.
Prima Donna. I remember Prima Donna was a very safe crowd pleaser.
That's when you get the fromage d'affinois. Because
right.
you know
right.
what? You got 10 friends over and they don't all appreciate cheese.
Right. Right.
And it's not even the focus of the event. So everything, it's going to be, you know, everybody's going to be focused on the TV anyway.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's all about just some really safe choices
uh-huh.
that. Everyone's going to love it. Nothing that's going to be like, you know, where one person's going, oh, that one was horrible. And then, oh, you missed the winning field goal. And like, you know, the distracting conversations
okay.
or things like that.
Okay, one more question before we're done. How about what cheese do you bring home for a special occasion?
Recently, for me, I would have to say Harbison.
Okay.
That's one for me that is just always on the money, just perfect texture, flavor, and very satisfying to me.
A Vermont cheese from the cellars of Jasper Hill.
Absolutely.
For whom I work. And how about you?
Well, recently, my roommate works at a European cheese shop, and he has been getting a line on some Robiolas that have been wrapped in leek. And they're pretty young, and they're raw. I won't say how young they are.
Uh-oh.
Barely legal.
Yeah, well, maybe not even. But they are fantastic. Okay. Oh, my gosh.
So that would be your current...
Well, that's what I would bring up to the farm right now and have the cheesemakers try. Although, I have to say, if I'm in the caves at the farm, consider Bardwell, there are a couple of experiments around.
Oh, Good. Will we be seeing any of them on the market?
Well, they're slowly trickling out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Slyboro, which Saxelby sells, was definitely a result of that.
Slyboro. I love the name.
Yeah, it cider washed goat cheese, soft and fudgy.
Ooh.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Okay. It's like an Iberian classic from Vermont.
Okay, well, our time is up. I want to thank Paul Price and Everett Presley for being my guests on Cutting the Curd. You can get this show on either Stitcher or iTunes for free, or you can find it on www.heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks a lot, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.